The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Man in Line's open line today till 1. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Loads of messages we didn't get to yesterday, so I'll try and fit some of those in, including, sadly, 20 miles per hour is only more bad news for the high street on the Isle of Man. It's becoming a massive concern with the government workforce and a huge wage bill, says that correspondent. And the current format of the TT gives fans two bites at the cherry to see all classes over two weekends, easing the demand on the boats over the 2 weeks. A return to what used to be three race days would only increase demand and prices on the available ferries. Living in London, by the way, 20 mile per hour, you get used to it. They're never going to increase it. Only the buses get away with it in London, as they can't maintain their schedules. Well, thank you for that. That's Ellis who dropped that note in from the smoke. And obviously in London, you can't get above 20 miles per hour because there's so much flipping traffic. That's why. What's going to happen over here, I wonder? David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. And I don't know whether you've seen the press statement that came out from Ogden District Commissioners. I'm only speaking on my behalf as one of them because I was at the meeting when the minister was there last on Monday at 6 o'clock and met the board. And subsequent to that, yesterday, it was drawn to my attention. I had a number of emails, and some people rang me up and said, what's the commissioners on about this 20-mile? We're all excited about it. We're all totally in favour of it. Incorrect, misleading statement from the minister. And I can say that because I was there, Andy, and we discussed the debacle over the 20-mile now limit. How it came about, I won't go into greater detail, but she did say regarding, we did say about the chief constable, what's the sense of having a regulation when you can't enforce it? And it was fairly quiet on that particular point of view. So the only intention from me is, personally, is to write to the chief constable, now his report is out, and ask him, you know, was he consulted about it? We don't have any contact anymore now because, remember, the police don't come to Onken anymore because they packed in the office. So the concerns have to go straight into the chief constable, I suppose, if no officers are coming round Onken anymore now. But there was two officers there with the minister. One of the officers took notes. So therefore, in my recollection too, if somebody took notes of the meeting, never mind us or their department is, they should share those notes with us now, and everybody can confirm now what was actually said. And I'll be looking for, I've already been on to the president of Timbal, left a message there and said to him, when a statement is made in Timbal, which is was recorded then Hansard for public record, Andy, for the future, if that statement is wrong, how do we get it corrected?
Okay, so what you said, let's skate by this again then. So she said in Tynwald that everybody at Onken Commissioners was happy and enthusiastic about the 20 mile per hour.
Yeah, I can't get the Hansard's not up yet, so unless you were listening to it. Sorry, I wasn't listening to it yesterday. I was doing other things, but people who did listen to it and some of the politicians, or maybe one of them there from Onken has been a bit mischievous as well in flashing it up to make, I think, the commissioners in a bad light.
Right.
And the residents know me and I know them, and it's if anybody has any concerns. And what I'd say to people now is we've still got time. Don't forget, the consultation doesn't finish. And she's having two drop-in sessions, none in Onchan. They're all down at the sea terminal, where there's not so much parking. I don't know where she's going to hold it in the boardroom. The boardroom's not that big, unless she's going to have it in the where the steam packet hall is. When the boats have gone, maybe there'll be hundreds coming down there and just talk. But I would say to people, get your views in. Bring Rob Collister up, as far as I'm concerned anyway, who's championed the position on us. We do want safety in Onchan. Yeah. That's the main thing. But why didn't she want to have this discussion a long time ago, and we could have ironed out everything instead of rushing towards getting it done? And then there was no apology for putting the polls in Onchan. It's just that they were done.
Yeah. And so, I won't ask you to speak on behalf of Onchan commissioners, but just, I mean, was the mood of the Onchan commissioners towards this 20 mile per hour limit, or is it the other way?
No, the mood is we do want safety through the centre of the village. We did, and I don't mind saying it, it's no big secret on it, exercise where the commissioners' offices are. There's two crossings there where the kids come from school, from Orchard School mainly, on the main road there. We've had incidents where the cars jump the crossing or the lights, which cause little bits of frustration, you know. And we wouldn't mind if they did something better for that, for the future. And I have a couple of issues regarding, and I've been on it before, and if anybody wants to challenge me about it, is if you're going to have a 20 mile now, why don't you start it at the top of the White Bridge instead of letting it come 30 into Onchan and then dropping it down straight to 20 and then signpost corner, as far as I'm concerned, because you've got the Manx Blind Welfare. There's a residential home there, and you've got Bemhaig School, where all the kids, we're encouraging kids to actually walk, aren't we, Andy, to cross a road.
Yeah. So tell me, is this proposal, will it make Royal Avenue 20 miles per hour?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get round Royal Avenue doing 20 because there's parked cars each side, and you couldn't do it anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's like some of these side streets. Onchan is full of 20 miles an hour. Birchill, Ballacurry, the residents I know that complain over a number of years, they've always said to me, is we've got a 20 mile an hour zone in Birchill, but nobody enforces it because they're breaking it all the time. Even at an odd few times, the buses are going a bit fast, Andy. All right.
Well, the whole thing at the moment is just it's not complete. Let's put it that way. And the fact is, if they can't detect people who are going over 20 miles per hour, and the police don't seem to want to get involved at this stage, then you have to ask, David, what's the point?
Well, I think the point is, if an accident occurs, God forbid it doesn't, it won't happen. But when an accident occurs, that's when the police will step in, do all these things, and there'll be an argument to say you were doing 21, 22, all sorts of things. And it'll be an absolute nightmare instead of doing legislation. What I learned years ago, Andy, was legislation needs to be good, needs to be enforceable, and you need to have law behind it. If you don't have law behind it, you're wasting your time.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you.
See.
Cheers now. It's 12:15 and Robert's on with us now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, we've got all sirens going off where we are at the moment.
Oh, my word.
I don't know what's going on. I think we're okay, though. We've just had a chicken bat, so it may have set the alarm off. Anyway, yeah, I feel like a big wild bear today. I've eaten too much, but I wanted to talk about the rest of politics. They had Hamilton in the UK, which was taken by Labour. Now, it stopped. They may have had a sweep to the left, an urgent sweep to the left, and the far right may have been taken aback by it.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking there may be a sweep to the left at the moment. I don't know what everyone feels about the situation, but that's my feeling. Anyway.
In the Isle of Man, you mean?
No, in the UK, Hamilton's in Scotland.
Oh, my word.
I was listening to the Scottish politics and it affects the Westminster Parliament. So I think there may be a sweep to the left, and they may be capitalising on that in Labour at the moment. But it's the rest of politics, Andy, at the end of the day.
Well, the Isle of Man, will just sit back and watch, Robert.
Well, they always have more people coming over under Labour, don't they, for some reason?
Well, apparently, that's it. Apparently, when Labour put the taxes up, which inevitably Labour normally do, that's when they reckon more people come over here. But we'll see, because there's a lot of competition for it. Portugal is offering people the chance to get residency, so is Malta, so is Spain, all sorts of other, and they've got a lot more sun than we have.
Well, I mean, that's is it a bucket and spades and all the rest of them? I don't want to get into that, but I mean, I think package holidays are there if people want to stay on for a bit longer and do a bit of legwork. They can do and get a job down there for a while.
Yeah.
Not sure they get much out of it, but I mean, there are jobs going in strawberry fields and things like that down there.
Okay.
So, you know.
All right, enjoy your chicken, Bap. Thanks for calling.
Well, the sirens stop now, so we're all okay.
That's good. Thanks for that. 17 minutes past 12. Myself and a few others did an experiment by driving from the bottom of Whitebridge to Glencrutchery Road at morning and evening peak times. This caused massive tailbacks and angry drivers. Oh, you did it at 20 miles per hour. Some took dangerous overtakes. Well, try it. I mean, try driving at 20 miles per hour. See how you feel. It just may be. And remember, the whole context of antisocial behaviour, you know, antisocial people are the people who drop litter, don't pick up dog mess, and also people who, you know, contravene the highway code. So if we are to go 20 miles per hour in certain areas, do you think the people who currently break the speed limit anyway, do you think they're going to take any more notice of a 20 mile per hour limit than they do of a 30 mile per hour limit? I just wanted to know if anybody saw the Panorama programme on travelling fares and the safety of people. Some of the safety checks aren't being actioned correctly towards accidents and deaths. Is the one here being checked correctly? Well, we assume so. It's gone now, obviously. But we assume that everything's checked correctly. Chris dropped a note in, 090. Seagull babies, love them or hate them, seagulls are a protected and declining species. Anybody who harms or kills any bird or animal needs serious psychiatric help. These are Chris's words, by the way. I'm astounded at the heinous behaviour from adults who children learn from towards gulls and their chicks. I've witnessed them kicking baby gulls, deliberately driving over gulls and terrorising them. I think it's disgusting, and the vets have a code of conduct who have to help all wildlife, including baby gulls. It's an appalling attitude. And thanks to the amazing MSPCA, who deserve a medal, and our contributions for helping. All the best. Thank you, Chris, for that. The problem with gulls at the moment is that they are declining, apparently. Are they declining? What's the official word? People need to be aware of the traffic light system at Brighton Terrace in Douglas. They're doing gas works for 2 weeks. Car drivers are skipping the lights and overtaking cars. It's very dangerous. Talking of cars, Lord Street bus station car park is closing, this unofficial car park. For a while, do you remember, they were collecting money. Now it's unofficial. It's got everything there. There were, I think there's 3 or 4 camper vans there. Some people are starting chess tournaments there. There are so many people there, and it's going to go, which means I'm estimating there must be at least 50 cars on the Lord Street car park. So where are they going to go? Where's everybody who now parks for free? Where are you going to go if you can't park in the Lord Street car park? It's set to close by the end of the week. It means unauthorised vehicles parked have to be removed by 6 o'clock this coming Sunday. So if you know the people who own the camper vans, tell them to go. Plans have been submitted for this 14-storey development on the site, including a multi-screen cinema, apartments, bus facilities, offices and commercial units. Now, the development people are SPV Limited, and they say it marks a step forward to the project, which has been many years in the making. When was the last time it was a bus station? Perhaps this means they'll get rid of that magnificent weed that's there. And by weed, I don't mean, well, anyway, you know what I mean, a big weed that's there. The thing is taller than the bus shelters, so maybe that'll go. Well, let's hope it happens. Let's hope something happens. I don't know. What are your thoughts? When the 14-storey design came out, there was something of a cry of surprise. We'll see whether or not it happens. On the day the health levy survey closes, Manx Care announced today and yesterday one retirement and one will be leaving as our senior positions. Pam said, every one of us employed by Manx Care know these are payoffs. Are they large payoffs? To make matters worse, Manx Care's created a new chief operating officer position. Have they advertised it? Question is, will the health levy be extra money for extra positions at this senior level to pay people off if Manx Care don't like what they're doing? Well, Teresa Cope is on next week. The chief officer, the chief exec of Manx Care is on next week. And she's normally very frank about this, so we'll ask where the extra money's going. Does she know how much extra money is going to be coming the way of Manx Care? NAHT, says Francis, I smell a tantrum. If they get what they want, it'll be followed by another massive pay rise. The joys of being able to hold the government to ransom. Well, it finishes today. There have been new developments in the ongoing dispute between the National Association of Head Teachers and Department of Education, Sport and Culture. School leaders represented by the NAHT are now being asked whether they support moving a ballot for industrial action. The union says it's a last resort. It's clear they feel pushed to the brink. They've accused the DESC as a misuse of disciplinary procedures, disregard for agreed policies, and victimisation of union officials. The union's identified four main areas of what it's calling critical concern, including victimisation of union members, which they say could amount to breaches of protected employment rights, two, repeated violations of fairness at work policy. Number three is misuse of disciplinary procedures, which the union says have been used punitively rather than as a tool for professional development. And finally, failures in leadership breaching the Public Service Code of Conduct. The union, this is the NAHT, says these aren't isolated but reflect a systemic pattern of behaviour that may constitute unlawful conduct. The dispute's been building over several weeks. You may remember a few weeks ago they were talking about a toxic and broken relationship. In May, they said the department had this toxic and unbroken relationship with school leaders, claiming that some leaders have been unfairly suspended, later cleared, and yet still face further accusations. They raised concerns about school leaders who were being discouraged from speaking to their union, which amounted, they say, to a culture of fear. The department rejected the claims, saying they didn't reflect the values and the matters were subject to internal processes. But the situation went up. In an interview, the union called for a formal review into the department's working culture and now what they see as continued inaction, no progress on the promised independent review, they're consulting members on whether to take industrial action. And as soon as we know what's happening, then you'll know. I wonder what you think about this, particularly bearing in mind what Jason Morehouse said the other day in Keys about attendances in schools on the Isle of Man and behaviour. We used to have schools that were tremendous, and they still are. But do you think this is a union just jockeying for position, or do you think there's actually something in it? And going back to the Lord Street site, what do you think should be on this? If you go to manxradio.com, the plan is actually on there. You can see what's happening. You can see exactly what they intend to build. It is huge. I mean, 14 stories is huge. It's going to tower over everything else. You'll be able to see it way out to sea. Maybe that's it. Chris said, I love them or hate them. Again, the seagulls are a protected species and we should protect them. If that's the law, that's the law, says Chris. Text, email, call and WhatsApp, whatever your thoughts are on this. We'd love to hear from you. By all means, do get in touch. We're open line through till one. And it's Julian with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
What a lovely day to be inside.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's getting warmer and warmer. 24 degrees by the weekend sounds good to me.
Very nice.
Bit of sea swimming, that'll be nice. We pretend it's the Costa Brava or something. Last night, Red Eléctrica, the main Spanish power system provider, has done a 182-page report on the power cut that happened in Spain on April 28th. And especially on page 38, they're admitting that 82% renewable generation at the time, a quarter of which failed to maintain adequate voltage control, and they didn't have enough nuclear or gas power stations online to provide inertia. So it kind of looks, they're basically saying that it was due to problems controlling the reactive power ratio across the grid. And it's all pointing to the fact that when the renewables go beyond a certain concentration in any grid, you get these problems. So that 182-page report, just look for Spain power cut 182-page report, and you'll be able to see quite a lot of detail as to what's the detail in that. It's a long report.
You would have thought by now, Julian, that they would have sorted this out, that they knew where the power was coming from. They know what the frequency needs to be. They know that you can't mess with electricity. It doesn't like it.
Mm. Well, it's a bit of a worry when we're going to be, when we're told that the Cervi wind farm over here is going to be taking over 100% of our nighttime renewables or whatever, our requirement. So it seems that the rule of thumb is they were warning about this a couple of years ago, that as soon as you start getting near 50% renewable penetration in the grid, you start having this problem of this inertia, these big, like at Pulrose, you'll have multi-ton rotors going around that naturally are resistant to change, which keeps the frequency nice and stable. Whereas what they're doing now is they're putting in these large sort of 40-foot container-sized grid inverters and condensers in to try and mimic it. The problem is, in the digital domain, you've got zero or one. So in every hundredth of a second, there's no inertia because it's like a computer being switched off for a fraction of a second. It's not the same as constant inertia from these big turbine, the big rotors going on. And the other thing that somebody's noticed is there's a noticeable increase in urban heat island effect near substations that have a lot of renewables. And what they think the problem is that all these massive inverters, they're getting hot. So, as you know, if you charge your phone up, you'll feel, the electrons that are flowing into the phone, they make the phone warm. So these big inverters that they're putting all over the country to try and mimic this inertia are actually causing, they're actually emitting heat up through the fans in the top of the thing. So it's kind of exacerbating this so-called heat problem that the temperature sensors are picking up, if you see what I mean, which you wouldn't have in a power station, which gives you that inertia for free anyway.
Okay, well, we wait, we watch, and we'll see, Julian.
Yeah, I noticed that in Tynwald the other day, they were saying that they will have to ask for some kind of money for this from Tynwald, so I think there needs to be a lot of scrutiny about all these things, especially with this 182-page report, because when we're going to have an inordinate amount of renewables all of a sudden on our grid, and this report is basically admitting that that is not a good idea.
Okay. All right, Julian, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
614 says, I don't mind the goals one bit. It's the idiots that feed them that need a slap. By the way, Man in Line does not condone acts of violence. I'm assuming that's just an idiom, just a way of saying it. The people who feed, I mean, there are signs in many places that say don't feed the gulls, and still people do. The speed limit's being ignored in Birchill Park anyway, and nobody has been knocked down. The problem is, you know, if somebody, if there is an accident, isn't there? So if 20 miles per hour, I mean, it is slow compared to what people do around. And look at place. I mean, David was talking about Royal Avenue. When there's nobody on Royal Avenue, and certainly the buses doing 20 miles per hour up Royal Avenue through Main Road, what happens at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, when there's nobody there? Is everybody still going to do 20 miles per hour? 20 miles per hour will be fine when we're all on our e-scooters. Thank you, Desmond. This new development sounds wonderful at Lord Street. Let's stop moaning, living in the past, and enjoy the investment, says 505. We'll see. H dropped me a note from 768. I'm a bit confused by the hysteria around the 20 mile per hour speed limit. The way people are talking, it's as if it's an all-island limit. Home zones are already 20 miles per hour with big speed bumps. Onken Village is a death trap with the light system and the shop traffic, so I think 20's plenty there. I agree that anywhere with a high level of housing should be 20 miles per hour, although maybe not roads where housing's well away from the road, such as Shore Road in Guernsey and the road past the airport. I think there just hasn't been enough information, so I've actually no real idea of where these limits will be, says H768. I was shocked when I heard on Manx Radio they're looking for suggestions to redesign Nobles Park. The park's very usable. And so the money would be better spent keeping the family library open. Wrong priorities, says H. There's also that play equipment in Nobles Park that would benefit from a bit of attention. Will you text, email, call and WhatsApp? And Lord Street is long overdue to be developed, in my opinion. The 14-storey building, I'm not sure about that. However, I did find it a little odd that at exactly the same time they're suspending parking at the old Summerland site as well. No indication of why or what is happening. Where are those 50-odd cars going to go? An MHK said the policy on living wage for migrant workers is bizarre. So the government's creating a two-tier system. This is Laurie Hooper, one of the Ramsey MHKs. From October, those seeking to come to the Isle of Man on a working visa will be required to have a job that pays the living wage. Now, the government's previously committed to match minimum wage with living wage by April this year, but it's not happened. Is Ramsey member Laurie Hooper.
I think it was a month or two ago in Tynwald. The government brings an amendment to the immigration rules that says, OK, but actually from the 1st of October, anyone moving to the island under a visa was going to need to be paid at least the living wage. So they've decided that we're not doing this for Manx workers because it's too difficult for businesses to pay. But we are going to do this for any foreigners coming here on a visa. That feels quite unfair to me. I think everyone should be paid a living wage. And I think you don't want to have a lower visa requirement than a minimum wage because you don't want to have people being undercut. But equally, what you don't want to do is tell people you can employ one person or another in this job, but if you employ a Manx person, it's going to be cheaper because you can pay them less. I don't think that's fair at all. So that's why I asked the government, what are you doing? Are you actually going to align the living wage for everybody with this new requirement, or are you going to create a two-tier system? And the answer was, they don't think they're connected at all. They're happy with a two-tier approach.
Treasury Minister reckons there's a misconception around the policy on wages for migrant workers. Dr. Allenson says the rules will relate to migrants' annual salary, not the hourly rate.
What we're talking about is the difference between a minimum annual salary, so what you earn over a year, and the minimum wage, which is what you earn in an hour. Now, in this country, we have a minimum wage, which is quite clearly set, and people can earn as much as they can in terms of how many hours they work. We've also got a minimum salary that people must be paid if they're going to move to this country on an immigration visa. And at the moment, it's remarkably low. It's about £20,000, and it's been so for quite some time. It hasn't gone up. In the UK, they've increased the minimum salary you must work as a skilled worker up to £38,000. So we're well out of kilter with the UK. So what we have proposed is to increase the minimum salary in stages to support yourself, because you're not eligible to benefits. That doesn't mean that they will be paid more of an hourly wage for doing the same job. That's against the equalities law. So it, I think people have got the wrong end of the stick in terms of some of these conversations.
Okay, get it? Got it? Good.
The extended Ramsey Garden Centre is deceptively large. You'll find a warm welcome and everything from bedding and perennials, fruit and vegetables, to lighting, garden ornaments, bird baths, bird tables, and indoor and outdoor pots. Come and browse at Ramsey Garden Centre.
Spring, a time for new beginnings and nature. This season, why not have a fresh start by switching your savings to Guernsey's Bank Skipton International and watch them grow? Skipton International offers a range of savings accounts, from fixed term to notice and easy access, enabling your savings to bloom for longer. So make this spring one to remember by switching to Skipton International today.
For details of all Skipton International savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
Get your tickets now for this season's range of onboard dining events featuring old favourites like the legendary Pie and Mash Train, the Curry Club and more, including memorable dining experiences on one of our Steam theme events with something for everyone. To find out what's cooking on the dining car or to book, call 697 457 or visit rail.im.
The Journey to a Dream podcast is where racing meets real life, from onboards to odd jobs and friendships forged at full throttle. This is all about motorcycle life beyond the helmet.
You can watch as many onboards, you can think you know where you're going, but everything changes at speed.
I'm a forklift mechanic. I've never had to say that in English.
What is it in Dutch?
Ben een heftruckmonteur.
Every time you go to a race meeting, before you know it, you can soon strike up great friendships and conversations because the motorcycling sort of community is so connected.
The Journey to a Dream podcast, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, is available now on the Manx Radio Motorsport website or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Thanks for joining Manx Radio's Man in Line. People have got the wrong end of the stick because it's not explained clearly by the government, which seems to be par for the course. I'm disillusioned with them, says Andrea. Did you understand it? Migrant workers always compete against Manx workers. We have hundreds of school leavers every year who need good jobs. We have many struggling locals who need help building their skills. I don't think these rules go anywhere near far enough. 178, Mark. If you don't know where the 20-mile-per-hour limits are going to be, just take a look at the published maps. And to confirm, there's likely to be a new speed signpost being installed close to the gate soon. Thank you, Andy. Good to hear from you. Are you reading? Or if the power goes off during the night, says Francis, Frankie, Francesca, if the power goes off during the night, those people who use a CPAP machine for sleep apnea, will they be allowed to die in their sleep? Somebody who knows somebody who uses a CPAP, I don't think it's necessarily fatal if it goes off, but I see what you're saying. Sleep apnea machines are sometimes very important. Will the families be able to sue the MUA? Well, this is something that has to be... I mean, we don't have power cuts very often compared to, 25 years ago, 30-odd years ago. Do you remember the Sunday afternoon bagatelle as to whether you could cook the joint in an electric oven? So what else would you like to talk about on Man in Line today? There are also, I'm trying to work out exactly what the Treasury Minister's saying. So an immigrant can work any number of hours, possibly 50, 60 or 70. They can be paid $25,000 per year. I'm puzzled. It sounds like he's encouraging something that he perhaps shouldn't be encouraging. Just a thought, says Pat in Laxey. What do you think? And particularly with regard to the fact that we're now coming into exam season at schools. So there will be lots of leavers coming into the market, into the employment market fairly shortly. So how do we make the playing field level for them? Remember, next week, Peter Washington and David Ashford are going to be on. Peter Washington is the chair of the Housing Committee at Douglas City Council. David Ashford is chair of Housing and Communities. And we'll inevitably be talking about housing. So that's Monday. And a week today, next Wednesday, Teresa Cope, the chief exec of Manx Care, will be on Man in Line. And you can text, email, call and WhatsApp on those 2 days. We're open line for the rest of this week. And two-tier policies are destroying the UK. So why are the politicians we voted for favouring immigrants over Manx workers that are struggling on the minimum wage, says Neil in Douglas. Is that so? I won't be employing a visa worker, says 382. Are people coming over here on visas, getting a job and then just disappearing? Are they heading to the UK? How does it work? Well, any thoughts on this? All you have to do is get in touch and remember, at the end of this month, there are those government roadshows. So you can talk to the government on all these. The Council of Ministers will be there Monday, the 30th of June, which is what, a week next Monday, Ramsey Grammar School, Tuesday, 1st of July at Ballycommeen High School, Wednesday, the 2nd at Castle Rushen High School, Thursday, the 3rd at QE2 in Peel. Doors open at 5:15. The event starts at 5:30, finishes at 8 o'clock. Each venue is accessible and there's on-site car parking. So you can meet the government. It's called the Listening to You Roadshow. Talk about whatever you want to. The Chief Minister's going to be there, members of the Council of Ministers, and, well, you can chat to them, and whatever you want to say, you can say.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
The monstrosity intended to be built in Lord Street, says Pat, should be built at Summerland. There'll be ample parking if administered properly. We come back to that vexed question of what to do with Summerland. Well, obviously now the centre of Douglas is taking shape, the Tavere development, which will be the development that's got the new travel lodge and also some retail development. That's taking place now. They're digging down. The footings are going to be in. But still, that iron statue is doing absolutely nothing on Duke Street. Nothing is happening. That's going to be hemmed in very shortly by the development that Tavere are doing. And still we hear nothing about what exactly is happening with that iron statue on Duke Street. I just wonder what is going to happen, and if they are going to build something there, how are they going to do it?
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Enjoy uncompromised relaxation at great prices in Millichap's Stressless Studio clearance event. Come and see the clearance prices for yourself and find out which of Stressless's range of recliner chairs is right for you. The Stressless Studio clearance event, now on downstairs at Millichap's of Ramsey.
Come on. Oh, not again. We need to go to Athol.
I only do Nissan.
Oh, don't be daft. The service and repair all makes and models.
Main dealer prices, though.
Our Nathan says it's not just about the cost per hour, as what one technician does in 3 hours, Athol might do in one. And you get a courtesy vehicle.
Look at that. Told you we needed to come to Athol.
Oh, be quiet and drive.
Back pain, neck pain, headaches, joint pain. At Align 4 Life Spine and Posture Clinic, we've been helping Manx residents for 15 years with our holistic, evidence-based care and therapies. Plus, we're now open Saturdays to make it even easier to see us. Visit our brand new website at align4life.com or find us on Facebook for opening hours and more information. Align 4 Life, 15 years serving the community of the Isle of Man.
Avishan Rish.
A Gilg, the Manx Gaelic. Chinian Amera, the mother tongue of Alian Vanin, the Isle of Man.
Avishan Rish.
You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast Aberschen Rish. Say that again.
Aberschen Rish.
Shene, that's the one.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Laurie Hooper's in Cloud Cuckoo Land. Well, this is Paul talking about Laurie Hooper with the idea about a tourism levy wanting to charge tourists to come here. We should be paying them to come here, not charging them extra tax. It sounds like a copy and paste from a new law in some other places. I'm shocked again by this sort of thing. The TT, I think, was worse than ever. The racing's great, but the costs now for everything have gone through the roof. And I can't accept vendors' excuse on cost that they have more customers than at any other time of the year. So they should be able to make a good profit keeping the prices the same as before TT. A breakfast box before TT was £7.50, £14 at the grandstand. The prices were very high. Any thoughts on that? Well, the TT boss, the enterprise minister, shall we call him, says there's going to be a thorough debrief of this year's TT and acknowledges that it is a challenging year. Have you got any thoughts on the TT? Well, Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you, Andy. It was just a little bit of additional information, please, regarding the 20-mile-an-hour speed limits yeah. and the costs, etc. And I've had an exchange with the minister, and I asked, please, regarding the expected £400,000 costs to roll out the 20-mile-an-hour speed restricted areas, in what year, stroke when, was that amount included in the DOI's budget request to Treasury? Question mark. And then, what questions have you received and what answers given to Alderman, I put in here, Doge, viz. Minister Without Portfolio, Mr. Crookall, regarding the cost of the 20-mile-per-hour rollout? And what, where and when the DOI will be making savings from its budget over the period to the end of this parliamentary period, because that's what Mr. Crookall's tasked with doing, isn't it? Making savings.
Yeah.
So she's come back, the minister's come back, and she says, Andrew, the work was included as part of the minor capital works allocation within the budget for 24-25 and 25-26. So somebody's actually put that in. So somebody's known about it to request this money from Treasury quite some time ago. And then she says she didn't ask the question, answer the question about has she been questioned, shall we say, by the Minister Without Portfolio or the Doge Minister about making savings. She hasn't answered that part. So we read into it that the Doge Minister hasn't actually been there to the department and asked her. So what is he doing? How many departments has he been to and asked them to give the savings plans? Doesn't look as though there's many. And then she says, the DOI is working within its budget and is taking steps to increase efficiencies, which doesn't always mean saving money, but can mean increased productivity. So I said, thank you for your replied information, which is appreciated, as it will enhance the timeline of events, who knew what and when. And I'll leave it now to maybe one of your other contributors, Julian, or somebody who knows how to do this sort of thing, to research this minor works budget and how it was approved and who put it in. But I said here then, re-increased productivity to me means the same number of people do more work for the same amount of money. Is that not so? She's replied, yes, same number of people working more efficiently will achieve greater output. So again, I'd be interested to know, I think, what the headcount is. Are they having more people, or is it the same number of people just doing more work?
What is it that bothers you particularly about this, Andrew?
The thing that bothers me, Andy, is we're told there's no money, and yet £400,000 can be found for minor capital works. What other minor capital works are there that have had approval. And the thing is, are these necessary or are they just nice to haves? It's nice to have it, yes, but is it necessary to have all these poles with 20 miles per hour or even repeating 30 miles per hour? Is it necessary? And there's much more deserving cases to spend money on.
Okay.
And surely Mr. Crookall, he has to be there, and I hate the analogy, but he has to be there like Mr. Musk and go in and say, no, is this a necessary? No. Is this a nice to have? Okay, fine. But you're not having it. You're only going to have the necessaries.
Okay, all right, we appreciate it. Andrew, thanks for calling today.
Yeah.
Thanks for your work as well. What's just been said by the Treasury Minister doesn't make sense. A minimum wage for a skilled worker is 38,000 coming to the Isle of Man. Then the minimum wage per hour and the annual wage earned are completely different. How, if you're working the average week, you'll be accumulate only what you've worked as a total annually? Or did I hear correctly, says Joe? Well, here's what let's listen to Dr. Allenson again.
What we're talking about is the difference between a minimum annual salary, so what you earn over a year, and the minimum wage, which is what you earn in an hour. Now, in this country, we have a minimum wage, which is quite clearly set, and people can earn as much as they can in terms of how many hours they work. We've also got a minimum salary that people must be paid if they're going to move to this country on an immigration visa. And at the moment, it's remarkably low. It's about £20,000, and it's been so for quite some time. It hasn't gone up. In the UK, they've increased the minimum salary you must work as a skilled worker up to £38,000. So we're well out of kilter with the UK. So what we have proposed is to increase the minimum salary in stages to support yourself, because you're not eligible to benefits. That doesn't mean that they will be paid more of an hourly wage for doing the same job. That's against the equalities law. So I think people have got the wrong end of the stick in terms of some of these conversations.
That's Dr. Allenson. So you're clear on that now? MHKs are keeping below living wage jobs for residents and the electorate and protecting incomes from being exploited. Is this true? Says NT. Well, what's your thought on it? Regarding the minimum wage, WhatsApper 648 says, why don't we copy the Canadian minimum wage system used in the hospitality industry? Workers get minimum wage and are expected to top up their wages by giving proper customer service. Then they're taxed on their expected earnings. It's a great incentive to work hard and giving good customer service. Make their wage up through tips. That's the Canadian system. Any thoughts on that? Well, tipping on the Isle of Man, that's a whole other program. The monstrosity intended to be built in Law Street should be built at Summerland, says that correspondent. It's obvious that there's a large increase in the population of the Isle of Man and Manx Care isn't coping. Well, apparently the island plan is to have an increase in the population of the Isle of Man. This much vaunted 15,000 extra people, 4,000 extra workers to take us up to 100,000. The DOI must have plenty of money advertising vacancies for painters at the moment, says 223. 45,000 plus pension and benefits. Is that true? 223. Do send me a link if you could. And a message in that says, I quite like the three legs column at the sea terminal. It's good how they made it into a triple street light. Could they do a similar one at the junction of Somerset Road, Albany Road and Cronkbourne Avenue? Thank you, Charles, for that. We'll get to like it. We'll get to love it, won't we? I wonder if it could be a bit bigger. What do you think? The government's thinking of introducing a healthcare levy. How are pensioners going to pay for this? Also, our broken healthcare system has resulted in many people having to pay for private dental care. How come those having to pay for private dental treatment can't claim against it in their tax? Should we be able to do that? This is something that should be introduced. Those that can afford private health care can claim that expense against income tax. But those that can't afford health insurance, but have to pay the private cost. I think we got that. Thank you, 223, for that. Well, if you've got any thoughts on that, and the vexed question, and I'm sure this will come up next week with Theresa Cope, the whole question of dentists on the Isle of Man and the UDAs, units of dental activity that the NHS dentists get paid for from Manx Care. We should vet people coming to the Isle of Man the same as Australia. We should be strict, also the same as Jersey. This is 382. It really doesn't make sense, no matter how many times you listen to Dr. Allenson, says Andrew. Well, you can play it back if you want. You can listen to the podcast any time of day or night. Simply go to manxradio.com or follow us on X. It's all there. You can find out simply by going to the podcast page of manxradio.com. Follow us on Twitter. Whatever you want to do, you can listen to The Man in Line morning, noon and night. In fact, some people do.
When The Man in Line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
I mentioned, didn't I, that David Ashford's going to be on next Monday. David Ashford, the chair of the Housing and Communities, and Councillor Peter Washington from Douglas City Council, chair of Housing. Now, if you have anything you'd like to put to the pair of them, you can either take your chances on the day, call, text and WhatsApp, or in the meantime, as you heard, you can call the answer phone on 682 631 or email maninline at manxradio.com. Ditto for Theresa Cope a week today, Wednesday the 25th. The Manx Care Chief Executive will be on. And just a little way ahead, in the start of July, on Wednesday the 9th of July, we'll be talking to the DESC Minister, Daphne Kaye, and her political members from Education, Sport and Culture, Sarah Maltby, MHK, and Paul Crane, MLC. So any thoughts on that? By all means, line them up and we'll watch them go. Interesting, I don't know whether you spotted. And I got a message in from Colin, who just said, is it true that 10% reduction in recorded crime on the Isle of Man? Well, it is true. Actually, the Chief Constable's latest annual report said recorded crime is down 10% off the Isle of Man. Well, one of the few places in the world you can say that. And on a day like today, something to celebrate. That's it. Thanks to Chris on the phones. Back tomorrow. Open line.
WINT.